Will you pray with me, please? Lord, now let the words of my mouth and let the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. A young mother once told me of a conversation she'd recently had with her 2-year-old daughter. The mother had said to the girl, "What do you do in Sunday school?" By way of an answer, the girl just burst out into singing a song. And she kept singing and singing. After a while, the mom said, "Oh, so you sing in Sunday school. That's very pretty. Would you tell me what else you do?" Now, the girl said nothing at all, just kept right on singing and singing her song. Of course, they did plenty else in Sunday school. They did Bible verses and stories and coloring and crafts and snacks. But the only answer this child would give was the singing of a song. I'd say that's not a bad answer. And I've imagined, what if someone were to walk in here and say to all of us, "What do you people do?" It might not be too bad a response for all of us just to throw back our heads and let loose with a great song together, harmonies and all. Now, that is a cruel thing to say right now when COVID won't let us sing a note together. Don't you miss it? Are you like me and cannot wait? But I think it would be more than an okay answer. Who we are could be expressed in the singing together of a song. Not because our main thing is music, but because everything a living church seeks to do is a little like music, meaning our every act of outreaching love, our work among the poor, close by and far away, our nurturing of children and teens and students, our ongoing education of adults, our efforts toward a more just and compassionate society, all our ways of caring for each other and people elsewhere, all our prayers, our preaching, our worship, all of it is like music because all of it is trying to express something that reaches far deeper and far more beautiful than just words or even just deeds can say. And it all rises from the inexpressible beauty of divine love for us all, and our love for each other, and all of it is born from the great passion of the good news, and all of it is an overflowing of joy. So yes, all we do here is to be like a song. And so the summons from Psalm 98, which was our theme text last week and is for today and will be next week again, which includes these words, "Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. God has done marvelous things. Make a joyful noise for the earth. Make a joyful noise before our sovereign, the living God." That kind of exuberant call to make music, and there are plenty of other verses like it throughout the Bible, is far more than a bit of instruction to strike up a band and sing something happy. It is a much larger summons to be expressive of joy before God and before the world. and how many, many ways there are for joy to be expressed in a human life and in a faithful church. Years ago, in this room, about halfway through a worship service, a woman passed out. Jean Amick just slumped over unconscious. 911 was called, and we said a prayer for Jean. And then there was a waiting time while the EMTs got here and attended to Jean as they needed to do. What do you do with that kind of space of time in a worship service and something of an emergency is going on? Well, maybe you say, as we did, shall we sing a hymn? Does anybody have a suggestion for a hymn? And suddenly from the back of the room in that corner came this booming voice. It belonged to Bill Ames, who did look just like Abe Lincoln and was a very friendly fellow, but could also be really stern and to me a little bit scary. And he was the one who boomed out his suggested hymn, Joy to the World. I didn't think that seemed quite fitting given the circumstances, but you really don't want to say, well, does anybody else have a different suggestion? And so we did it. And as the EMTs carried Jean out of the room, we were all singing Joy to the World. And you know the EMTs had to say to each other as soon as they were out the door, those people are nuts. Turned out Jean was fine, but it was really weird. And all the more so because it was not Christmas. It was nowhere near Christmas. But it turns out, and did you know this? Joy to the World is a song that was never meant to be a Christmas carol. It makes no reference at all to the season. It was written 300 years ago by a pastor named Isaac Watts to be a paraphrase of Psalm 98, our theme text last week, today, and next. Churches at the time and far, far beyond sang Joy to the World throughout the year with no seasonal attachment. It wasn't till two centuries later that a choir released a recording of Joy to the World to be played on the radio in December of 1911. That people began to listen and say, you know, that sounds like Christmas. I think it's just perfect that a hymn we tie to Christmas was never meant to be confined within the jolly season, but was apropos to any time. So maybe Bill Ames was kind of right. Joy doesn't keep a schedule and cannot be contained. Joy is a freedom that wants to be expressed anytime and in all manner of ways. Frederick Buechner said, we need to be reminded that at its heart, Christianity is joy. And that laughter and freedom and the reaching out of arms are the essence of it. Some will shake their heads at that. Laughter is at the heart of it. Christianity at its heart is joy. What about the wreckage and the horrors of the world? Is there no room for grief in our faith? Are we not encouraged to have grief and also outraged that so many in this world are oppressed, abused? Of course we are to feel such things. And in fact, grief and outrage are required of the followers of Jesus. And the truth is, for us, grief and outrage are grounded in our joy. Joy in knowing divine love for us all. Joy in our love for each other. We grieve and rage when joy is under assault and we are in search of the fullness of joy, and we do so in the sure and certain knowledge that the giver of joy will have the final word. Oh, sing a new song to the Lord, a new one every day, a new one every season. God has done marvelous things and will again break forth into joyous singing and songs of praise. People think of Jesus as a very grave person, as at times he most definitely was. The burden he carried within him was so heavy. And when he saw people suffering, he wept, and he grew furious at hypocrisy and cruelty. But have you noticed? They kept inviting him to their parties. People flocked to him. Most notably, sinners enjoyed his friendship. People felt more alive, more energized, and hopeful in his company. And he said, "I have come that they might have life and have it in abundance." He has rightly been called the man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. But we can also rightly call him a man of exuberance and very well acquainted with gladness, and a master at sharing it. Joy was his center, and joy was his purpose. On his final night, he spoke to his friends at length about the life they were to live when he was gone. He told them that they must live as servants to others in their need, as he had done. He assured them that they would grieve, assured them they would be hated, told them to care for each other, told them to keep learning more from the Spirit, told them to abide in his love. And he added, "I have said all these things so that my joy may be in you, and that so that your joy may be complete, so that your joy may be total." And then he concluded the session with what? The singing of a song. He would now go out into the night of his agony and crucifixion, singing with his friends a song of praise for God's liberating love. What a staggering claim is made later by the New Testament book of Hebrews, who said of Jesus, quote, "Who for the joy that was set before him, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross." What a claim that his giving of his life was for the sake of his joy. But this is what joy always does. Express itself by the pouring out of itself. Maybe you've heard the old song, maybe you've sung it, "I've got joy like a river, and peace like a river, and love like a river." That's it. Joy flows. It rises from this deep, hidden source. It springs out, it is fed, it pours itself out, moving, spreading, growing to give life and sustain life. Joy is like a river. It moves and gives and keeps giving itself. The poet and Sexton said the same thing this way: "The joy that isn't shared, I've heard, dies young." And this is the life of our faith. Having been found by joy, we sing it out in all possible ways. Sing joy in our music and our worship. Sing out joy in serving meals. Sing out joyous praise in the offering of shelter to unhoused people. We make a joyful noise in partnership with fantastic health givers and workers among the poor in Nicaragua. We sing joy in the educating of minds and in the caring for souls and in monetary commitments to make it all happen and keep happening. Let all such expressions of joy be unbridled and free-flowing and glad. Mary Oliver was so right to say, "Give in to joy. Don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not meant to be a crumb." This is more than a privilege. Joy is our mandate. In a world under siege by fear and falsehood and hate, communities of joy are a revolution. There is too much at stake now to be joyless. It is our duty to live our lives as songs of joy and to have, as someone has said, that most beautiful form of courage, the courage to be happy. Oh, sing new songs to the Lord, new songs over and over. Break forth in joyous song, and may such a song be my life and your life and our life together.